Living sober. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. If you're back, welcome. If you're here for the first time, welcome too. And if you like what you hear, please subscribe to my channel. You can go to my website and get my newsletter into your inbox every Friday if you go to elizabethchance.com. And I am so excited to have Kurt Schmidt here. He is from my hometown, which I never even knew until right this second before we started recording. I'm like, wait, where are you? And he's like, I'm in St. Louis. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm from St. Louis. His company is called thepeernetwork.com. Hi, Kurt. How are you?
Hey Elizabeth, I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. How's the loo?
It's good. It's kind of gross out here right now. It looks like it's green outside and the weather's nasty. And we had some tornado warnings this week. It kind of looks like one of those days out where
Oh,
there may be some tornado warnings, but
I
hopefully we
remember
make it
that from
through
growing. Oh my gosh.
unscathed.
I remember that from growing up. I mean, now I live in Florida. I mean, we get hurricanes, but I remember growing up and that all that fear, right? And I'm way older than you. I mean, he's like, oh, you're like, I think you're 16 years younger than me.
I just turned 39 yesterday, so.
Happy birthday. Oh my gosh,
Oh,
happy
thanks.
birthday. That's
Thank
awesome.
you. Yeah.
But it's so funny because when you talk about like tornadoes and stuff, like all it does is bring back this fear of me, like I've got to get under the desk. Or when I was little, I would take my brothers and sisters and the alarms would go off and we'd go to the basement and I'd be so scared. And I'd bring, now this is really going to date me, Oscar Mayer bologna and
Yeah.
Wonder Bread and some milk. And we'd go in the
Yeah,
basement and be like, oh my God, the world's coming to an end. But that fear, and you're really helping people today when it comes to mental health, and fear is a huge one, isn't it?
beer is a huge one. And speaking of going down the basement, Tuesday night, all of our the alarms went off, and I have two daughters that are one's going to be 9, one's 7, but 4 in the morning, they start going off and they're running out of their rooms, and we had to come down the basement, spend an hour down here. It's crazy. But yeah, fear is a big one. It's a driver for a lot of people, and I think most people that struggle with these things, fear is a big part of that,
Totally. It's huge. I'm making notes, by the way. That's what I'm just doing on the side, just so you see.
Sure.
So tell us, what's your story? How did this all, how did you get to this place where you decided to start the peer network? And what has your journey been like?
Yeah, so my story's like a lot of many people. I struggled with substance use. For me, that really started when I was, I would say, 12, 13 is kind of when I first got exposed to, sneaking a beer here and there, and family functions. It was You're from St. Louis. It's just like we a big family, big extended family. There was a lot of parties and things like that, and that was just kind of the norm. That's what I grew up in, and I had older cousins and trying to fit in, and it was just that's what kind of started it. And I don't know how much detail you want to get into right now. We can, but my first experience with drinking was probably when I was 12 or 13, and then it kind of progressed to smoking pot, or trying it. And then as I got older, things kind of progressed. And, part of my story, I guess, is, I have a family history of that too. So I had a father who struggled with alcoholism. He passed away a couple years ago from it. So I had the genetic component and then also kind of the environmental component. But as I got older, I played sports in high school. From the outside looking in, everything was good. But, growing up with a parent that struggled with that, now looking back and kind of where I'm at today, I can see that maybe that had a lot to do with, going back to what you said about fear. I felt like I always had this fear that I was going to get found out that, my dad struggled with that. And I always felt like I was hiding something. And a lot of those behaviors of hiding and kind of the shame and all those things kind of manifested in me, feeling better when I used substances. I didn't feel like I had to hide, but as I progressed in my addiction, That was a strength for me because I was good at hiding things and I could hide it, or at least I thought I was hiding it. To everyone else, I wasn't. But so really it started when I was young, like most kids, just kind of experimenting. But as I got to high school, college, things really progressed for me and led to other substances and first treatment and things like that. So I'm happy to like go into detail. I don't know if you want the whole
Well,
story
I
right
think
now.
it's
It's
really interesting for one, because we're both from the Lou. And I always tell people that, people are like, well, for one, where's St. Louis? Where's Missouri? I'm like, it's right there, smack yeah, in the middle. And I started drinking too at 13. And I thought it was, I think it's so fascinating in so many ways that we, like, at least where we grew up, it was like apple pie, the Cardinals, right?
And beer.
And beer. It was Anheuser-Busch. It was Anheuser-Busch, and not like I'm crazy about Anheuser-Busch right now, but whatever. I haven't had a beer in almost 18 years. But that whole thing, like growing up, and it was like that's how we had fun. That was our thing. We got on our bikes. I went to Ladue. You went to a Catholic all boys school, so you had, and that was the other crazy thing. Like I was raised with religion. Like I was raised going to church all the time, weren't you?
I mean, my family's a Catholic family, and that was, I don't like to equate Catholicism to drinking, but that was a part of it. I mean, everything we did, Easter, any holiday, anything, alcohol was like there,
It was the
and it was
center
a
of
big
attention.
part
Like
of
the
it.
enter wasn't it like the center of attention? It was like, okay, who's gonna drink? Who's gonna get really drunk? And I always thought that my parents seemed so much happier when they were having a cocktail than you.
Yeah, for sure. And it, don't get me wrong, Elizabeth, it was fun, like for a time, right? And even, with parents and even, I mentioned my dad, but it wasn't always bad. It was, things progress, right? And now it's kind of crazy. You start to see kind of the ramifications of that with other people in the family. Most of the people in my family all had normal jobs, steady jobs. I think part of that generation, drinking was just kind of, at least the way I look at it, based on how I was raised, that was just kind of the norm. Like that's what you did. But now I'm starting to see, kind of the health consequences of that, catch up to people and things like that. And it's just kind of crazy to see. And it's, now I think there's kind of the shift towards it's not so much the cool thing anymore. A lot of people are seeing, hey, this can be dangerous, right? And a lot of people are moving away towards just, whether it's abstinent or just moderating more and focusing more on health, which is awesome,
Well, and I think a lot of people today are talking about it. Like when you brought up that word shame, which was so big for me. I mean, when I first started doing all of my like outreach and everything, I was like, sober, not ashamed, sober, not ashamed, even though I still had so much shame from all the things I had done when I was younger. And it was such a main focal point for people. And I feel like young people today, they are not drinking as much as we were. Now, the drug scene is a little bit different, and more kids are dying today than ever before. I had a woman on my podcast who was, she was a mom of a child who was a heroin addict. Thank God he got sober 16 years ago. But, today we can't try, kids can't try drugs like they were doing.
Yeah, it's scary. I mean, even, I was talking to a client about this yesterday. And it's just not the same. I mean, even for me, 12, 15 years ago, like doing drugs, like you knew what you were getting, and there wasn't a risk that, hey, there's going to be fentanyl in whatever substance you're buying, and if you were buying, I was never a person to really take pills, but if you were buying a prescription drug, from someone, kind of illegally, right? It was usually that prescription drug that was prescribed to somebody. Now people are, making stuff in their house or wherever and pressing who knows what into it. And it's just like, it's like Russian roulette every time. I mean, and I know someone this year that passed away from that, and someone who never really even used the substance that they passed away or they thought they were buying that ultimately took their life, It's just, it's crazy. And I have kids and I worry about that. It's scary.
I have kids too. I mean, mine are a little bit older than yours. Mine are out of college. I mean, my son's about to start a PhD, but it's interesting for me. I always they my oldest was 10, my next one was 8, and then my youngest was 6 when I got sober. And so for them, I always talked about it. And I think it's an interesting thing with these pills because at least when I was growing up, like my parents didn't take pills, right? That wasn't like something, and not everybody was going to the doctor getting this pill or that pill to make you okay. I mean, nobody really took pills, right? I mean, your parents partied, and that was about it, right? And maybe they take an aspirin, a bear aspirin. Like that's how long ago this was. I mean, there wasn't even Advil really around. And so today, showing our kids that they're like a pill's going to make everything better, which is a big fat lie, don't you think?
Oh, totally. I mean, there's definitely situations when that's needed. Like, I'm not against medication in general, but yeah, it's definitely it's not a fix-all for everything, right? And I think like the culture, even working as like a therapist, I don't know. It's just there's definitely times when people have like a severe mental illness where they need some sort of medication or
I agree with
intervention
that.
that
I
way.
agree too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just, but there's, it's just, we're so quick to like jump to that solution when really, I mean, if someone's functional, we should focus kind of on the basics, right? Like, hey, are you eating healthy? Are you exercising? Are you sleeping? Like, do you have a social network? Like, all those things that even in other countries, like, that's where they start, and it's not, hey, yeah, you're a little sad today, so let's prescribe a medication and that should help,
When did you become a therapist?
So I was provisionally licensed, I just 2 years ago. So I went back to school. Most of my background is, so I can go back a little ways here. So my undergraduate degree, I went to Purdue, and at that time, my addiction was like full-fledged. I don't know how I graduated. I did. They basically were like, we want you to graduate so you don't ever have to come back here again. And there were some other things that happened that last year where I was basically told, don't come back to this state, for a long time. And so I graduated from there, and then I, kind of my addiction mind at the time, I had cooked before in restaurants. My cousin's uncle, so not blood uncle, but owned some restaurants, and I cooked there. I was a dishwasher when I was 15, so like I had exposure to the restaurant industry, and I loved that. And so I went to culinary school after my undergraduate degree in Chicago. And somehow made it through that, barely made it through that. But, I worked in restaurants as a chef. And then kind of, my addiction kind of took hold. And that was kind of like the first time I went to treatment. I was like, I can't go back into restaurants. So I got more in like the corporate food service side where I was working with healthcare organizations, hospitals, kind of managing the food service, and kind of rose through the ranks there to be ultimately like a director of some hospitals and things like that for their nutrition and food service. But that was my background, and then I switched from there and got into supply chain technology. And then when COVID hit, I just, it was a tough time for a lot of people, right? And I was looking to kind of get in the mental health field, and I was thinking like, what's the, I wouldn't say the easiest way, but how do I get into where I'm working with people where I don't necessarily have to go back and get a master's degree, right? Another postgraduate degree, because I'll back up a little bit, but during that time, I finished my MBA at Webster here in St. Louis. And so I didn't necessarily want to go back and get a social work degree. And a friend of mine told me about peer support, which I had never heard of. And I started looking into it. He's like, you know, this would be a great kind of segue into it. If you want to go back to school and get like a clinical degree, you know, you could do peer support. So I did that. And while working as a peer support specialist at an organization here, I decided to go back to school full time for social work while being a peer full time. Like, so
And
it
being
was
a dad,
crazy.
and being a
And
dad,
being
and
it, yeah.
being a husband, and having two small
And
children.
yeah, and being kind of, you know, I think at that time I was like early in like this round of sobriety. And I say this round, like this is the last round. I'm not planning on any more, but you know, much of my 20s was kind of, I'd go periods of time without drinking and then I'd start again. And you know, I was able to kind of manage it, but ultimately it would get out of control. But I ended up going back to school, got my master's in social work. I finished it, I guess, about a year and a year ago. And so this last year I've been working as a provisionally licensed therapist here in Missouri, at a private practice, which I had also been working as a peer. And so up until yesterday, you know, I was there, and now like now it's just full time the peer network and focusing on that. So that's kind of where I'm at.
It's pretty exciting stuff, I have to say.
Yeah.
And did you use 12-step when at all during this process?
Oh yeah. Yeah, so I was exposed to 12 steps. I was hospitalized when I was like 20, 22, 23. I had a seizure. I was on a trip actually to, I've had multiple seizures, by the way. But the first time I had a seizure, I was on a trip to Honduras doing like some volunteer work, building a school. And I remember it like it was yesterday. I got down there. You know, we drank when we were down there, but like we didn't have like as much as I was used to drinking at that time. And about day three being down there, I just remember sitting on this beautiful, like it was this little compound we stayed in, this deck that was screened in, overlooking like we were up in a mountain and like the jungle kind of. And I just like don't remember anything. I remember waking up on the floor. You know, I had bit my tongue, it was swollen. All my muscles were like aching because I guess I, you know, from having a seizure, I was like stiff. And I remember flying home that next day, and I was hospitalized in Florida, actually. And a gentleman who I remember his name, which I won't say, but never met the guy in my life, like had not been involved in 12 steps, came to the hospital, and I was still going through detox. You know, I was out of it. And he came and talked to me, and I ended up going to treatment from that hospital. And connected with him when I got out, and he was my first sponsor. So yeah, it was. And I, you know, that was the first time I ended up getting a year sober. And he was a big part of that, and 12 steps were a huge part of that. I mean, I was in meetings every day. You know, I was by far the youngest person there. You know, I was living in Florida at the time, and
Where were you?
I was in Pensacola
Okay.
at that
Yeah.
time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a small community, and it was what I needed at that time. And it was, yeah, that was the first kind of exposure to 12 steps, so that I was serious about, right? Like that I
Yeah.
was committed and worked the steps, had a sponsor, and did the work, basically.
And today, do you use 12-step as well or no?
You know, I don't as much, I don't anymore. I did have a sponsor here, in St. Louis that I still stay in touch with. And like we text every now and then, but to be fully transparent, I'm not as involved as I once was. And I think that's mainly just because it's a time thing, and you know, my whole day is based around recovery and, you know, being involved in the community. Not that it's an excuse, but it was definitely instrumental for me. And I think for a lot of people, it's not their cup of tea, but for me, it was the game changer, you know, even though I'm not as involved as I once was, but I truly believe like it was a big part of what saved my life, you know?
And it's still at your core, wouldn't you say? Like, you
Yeah,
don't ever forget it,
totally.
right? It's like riding a bike, you don't ever forget it.
And I think, you know, you could take the 12 steps and apply it to any person's life, even if they don't struggle with substance use. You know, it may be the first step besides that, but everything else, you know, being honest, doing inventories, making amends, like all those things, you could translate that into anybody else's life. And I even see companies when they have like, you know, frameworks for if it's like core values or like how they want their employees to behave or act, you could see the 12 steps kind of at the core of some of that. And I always wonder, like, did someone, you know, someone who wrote that was probably involved in 12-step program at some point.
Well, a lot of it is what we learned when we were little and being Catholic, right? I mean, a lot of it was this core stuff, like having morals that we didn't have when we were younger, right? I mean, I remember like a fifth step. I just did confession for the first time in 40 years. So I felt like, wow, it was a little bit different than doing a fifth step with just a regular person and doing it with a priest. It was like definitely cleansing that I had that was felt amazing. I recommend it to anybody who's out there who's like, I haven't been to confession, I don't want to go. You should go. It's like so amazing. And the priests are lovely, I have to say, at least the ones I've met so far. So then where did the peer network come about? Tell us about that.
So when I was working as a peer, I worked for a local, I wouldn't local kind of regional company that works a lot with drug court, DUI court, family court, people that are involved in that. And so I was a peer there, and I was working there, and I loved it because I noticed that when people in those programs or people that were there on their own, most people weren't there on their own. They were forced by the courts because it was either complete this program or you're gonna go to jail kind of thing. But when they found out like I was in recovery and that I was there to basically support them, help them, kind of meet them where they're at, and that I was trained to do so, but I wasn't a clinician, right? Like I wasn't a clinical therapist or licensed professional counselor. I was just a peer. Like the walls would come down and they would open up. And, you know, a lot of the feedback I got a lot of time was that they enjoyed working with a peer more than they did the clinician. Not that like those roles are completely different. I want to make that distinction. It's not, peers do not replace clinical support, but they were just more open to it, and it definitely broke down some of those barriers, even though they were like forced to be there, right?
Yeah.
Because they would open up and talk. And when I was there, I had a huge caseload of clients. I think I had at one point like over 100 clients, which there was no way I
Wow.
could meet with them and give them the attention that they needed. And we were like really underpaid as peers. And I, you know, as I came to find out, is that the organization and organizations that hire or that employ peers, they get reimbursed at a pretty high rate. Like, you know, in Missouri, I think it's, I don't want to, we'll just say it's a lot, right? And the
Let's just
peers
say
are making,
$100. Let's just use an easy number.
I think it's less than that. We'll just say $80 or $85 per hour. Okay. And peers were making $15 to $20, $15 per hour, really. And I found that out and I'm like, wait a minute, you know, that doesn't seem right. Because what I was seeing is that a lot of peers, not just at that organization, but peers I know, they end up leaving the field or they go pursue like, a clinical degree. And not everyone can do that or wants to do that because it pays more. And so I thought there was an opportunity there to create a platform where, first of all, we can pay peers what they deserve to be paid and give them a platform to do that, and then educate the general public about what peer support is and how it can be helpful for anyone. Like, you don't have to be part of a program that you're forced to go to. You don't have to be at residential treatment. You don't have to be an intensive outpatient. Like, it may just be something similar to a therapeutic relationship where you meet with a peer once a week because maybe you're struggling with alcohol, right? And like, you don't need to go to treatment, but maybe you're just on the fence about like, hey, is this a problem? Like, can I just talk to somebody about like their experience, what they've been through? Someone that's trained to understand like boundaries, be professional, is trained in, motivational interviewing to really meet clients where they're at and just support them on wherever they're at in their recovery. And so that's why I started this, because I'm passionate about peer support. I'm a peer. I'm a certified peer in Missouri still. And I just wanted to give peers that opportunity, and I saw that there really wasn't anything out there like that. And just wanted to create something that could kind of expand the reach of what we do and help as many people as possible.
Okay, I love this. Okay, so I'm going to back up with a couple questions.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so I know drug court. And so the people that
Yeah.
are out there and you're listening, you're like, I have no idea what drug court is. If somebody gets arrested and has the opportunity, the judge will say, I will give you drug court, meaning that you will randomly be selected to come in and have be tested to see if you're on drugs or alcohol. You have to go to a certain number of meetings, right? Certain number.
Yes. So the program I worked at was here in St. Charles, and it's pretty intense. It's 18 months. The first, 6 months or so, you're there 3 times a week. And granted, you're expected to have a full-time job too while you're doing this. And you can't drive. So like, you're expected to be there 3 times a week, and that includes groups. You basically have to call every morning to see if you're selected for a drug test. And if you are, you have to be there within an hour or two or whatever it is. So it basically just like uproots your life, and it's 18 months of that. Now, gradually it steps down over the 18 months and it's less and less intensive. But yeah, you complete that program successfully, and a lot of people don't complete it successfully just because it is super demanding, and you avoid going to jail,
See, and
basically.
so wait, I gotta do time out. So I gotta
Yeah.
tell you a story. So I met a woman at a meeting here, a 12-step meeting, and she said, will you sponsor me? And I was like, well, just tell me a little bit about her. She's been in and out and in and out and in and out. And like just days prior, she had been arrested and she had been to jail and she had been to a hospital because she was ODing. And she was offered drug court. And I said, did you take drug court? And she's like, it's just too much work. It's just too much work. And I looked at her, and I'm like, well, I'm too much work of a sponsor. I can just tell you that much. I'll tell you that right now. It's too much work. And you think about it, and we say this in a joking manner in some sort of way that, like, oh, it takes a lot of work. But you know what? Your life is worth a lot of work. Like, if you're addicted to drugs and your options are A, you're going to go spend your how many ever, whatever the sentence is,
Years,
years
yeah.
in prison, eating whatever they tell you to eat, getting up whenever they tell you to eat, doing what, like, I think that the cost of having to be somewhere of your time, like for 3 days a week, like, big deal. Like, get over it.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah. And yeah, but that's just how crazy I think addiction is, right? We
It
don't
is.
like in when we're in that, we don't even think like that. Or I mean, I'll speak for myself, but like, the irrational thinking is just like, you look back and you're like, what was I thinking? Like,
I mean, this
and
woman had children. I was like, Wait a minute. You have an option of A, going down this path that will be, yes, it's going to be stringent, but you could get better. Or B, you're just going to keep doing what you're doing, let's be honest, and not change at all. And you're never going to see your kids. Like, you're going to be in prison. It is this disease, and people don't understand how cunning, baffling, and powerful it is.
Yeah, and, you know, with the drug court in the family court, so family court is when, you know, your kids are taken away, basically. DUI court, you know, all those people, especially in DUI court, you know, they have had multiple DUIs. If they don't complete the program, their backup sentences are typically 5 years. So they're going to go to prison for 5 years. Now, they may not serve that, but, you know, there are people that just do that, you know, which is crazy. But I will say this, you know, the people that can, I know, because I would go to the graduation for the people that when they completed it, one of the speakers, I think the last one was, he was a judge on the Supreme Court in Missouri, I think. And he was one of the founders of this program like 20 years ago. And the people that actually complete the program successfully, 90% of them do not reoffend ever. And when I say reoffend, I mean get caught. I'm not saying they don't go out and maybe have a lapse or something or do something dumb, you know, but they don't get arrested and they don't end up going to jail. So like that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
That's pretty great statistics. Cause let's face it. I don't think, like, I know that when I did my training, cause I'm a recovery coach, you know, when I did my training at one of these rehabs, one of these nice, I mean, the statistics are abysmal. I mean, they're like, maybe three of you will still be sober out of 100. And I'm like, these odds are horrible. And I've just paid whatever $60,000 to send my loved one to this place. And you're telling me that my odds are nothing, but drug court has 90%. Like, that's amazing.
Well, if you think about it. So I know, and not to go down this rabbit hole, but like the research, I think, shows the longer you can go by being, you know, abstinent over time, like the better the outcomes typically. And you know, those drug court programs here and DUI court programs, they're 18 months. So, you know, those people are graduating that program with 18 months of sobriety, you know, assuming that they have no positive drug screens during that time. But that, you know, that's a good jump start for a lot of people. I mean, that's like a huge...
No, it's a huge gift. I think it's a huge gift because I tell people all the time, I use the analogy, like my first year of sobriety, I just look at palm trees because that's where I live. And, you know, you plant a palm tree and you put all you in the beginning, you fertilize it and you water it all the time, right? You take care of these plants that we're planting in the very beginning in the spring, let's say. And we want to be able to weather any storm, and especially here with the hurricane. You know, you see a palm tree and it goes bends all the way over and it comes back up. And you do that in the first year. But if you get 18 months, right? 18 months, that tree is going to be really firm. So you can really weather anything, which is amazing. I love this.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times during those 18 months, I mean, they're, you know, a lot of people are starting to like take care of their health and like, you know, their job performance gets better. Like they start to see all these things that their life just becomes more manageable. And I'm assuming that has something to do with like the success rate, you know, is that, yeah, it sucks being there and it's hard at first, but like the downside or the alternative is pretty bad too, you know?
It's bleak. It's bleak. Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting because you think about it, because you're like, I'm giving you an opportunity that I get to do this. You know, I've been reading a lot of books about the Blessed Mother recently, all the things that they say is that the way we phrase things in our head is like, I get to do this, instead of I have to do this drug court, I have to do this, I get to do it, which is so amazing. And how many people do you think are actually incarcerated that are drug and alcohol addicts?
Oh, a lot. I don't even know, but I mean, a ton. I mean, I just had to put some information together. I think the cost of substance abuse related to incarceration, because I had to do a presentation for some things for my business, but I think it's like, don't quote me on this, but it's either like 19 billion or 39 billion just based on people incarcerated because of mental health or substance use related things, right? Which is crazy. But yeah, and to your point, Elizabeth, the people that get to do those programs, they're selected. Like, not everyone gets that opportunity, right? Like, I know here they have to be kind of go through like an interview process to see if they're even a good fit for the program. And then if they get selected, then the work starts and they have to complete it. But yeah.
Well, I love what you're doing with the peer support because I know, for a long time, and I believe myself personally, my opinion is that, AA's changed a lot since COVID. It's a lot different than it used to be. Today, there are so many other ways, and I'm doing air quotes if you're listening to this, not watching it on YouTube, to get sober these days. Sober Curious, Sober Sis. You can go online to join chat groups, da 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 da. But I love that there is a way to have somebody to be accountable to.
And I think peer support is, it's an evidence-based practice, just like clinical therapy. Like, there's a lot of research out there that shows it works. And for those that don't know what peer support is, it's peers are people who are in long-term recovery or in recovery, from substance use or mental health, sometimes both. And they go through training and certification to provide support to people going through similar challenges. So it's really based on the foundation's really like shared experience, talking to somebody who's maybe the story isn't the exact same, right? But they can relate on a personal level, like, hey, I get it. And peers really meet people where they're at. There's no stigma because they've been there. And then, they're trained in kind of the foundation of it's motivational interviewing, like helping clients set goals, meet them where they're at. And it's not really figuring out why you got to this point, like what trauma did you have? And that stuff comes up, but it's not like unpacking all that, like sometimes in clinical therapy you do. It's more like, hey, let's focus on where you're at right now and like where you want to go and how do we get there? And they support people to get to where they want to go.
I love that. And you mentioned that it's not just for people that are addicts as well.
So it's mental health too. There's even peer programs now, and there's a couple people on our team that have lost like children to addiction, and so like there's even peer education and things like that that are focused on providing family support. So like we even support family members that have loved ones that are struggling, like how to help them navigate that or connect them to resources for their loved one and just provide support in that area too.
Well, it's really amazing because I know a lot of people these days need a lot of help because we are living in a mental health crisis. I mean, they're finally talking about it. It's finally become a buzzword on the campaign trails, especially coming up for 20 November. And I do believe that we need to get out there and talk about these things because what's going on and coming over our borders is killing our kids. And we've got to like build our own warrior, like our own. Like soldiers, and you're one of them. You've got your people going out there and talking to them, and I thank you so much for that.
And like what we do, all of our services, we have like our team members go out and do events in the community and things like that. But we do everything when we meet with clients, it's through telehealth. And like all of our peers are nationally certified. And so like at our website, anyone can sign up. It's free to sign up. And you just pay basically if you book with a peer. And that allows us to pay our peers really well, allows them to do what they love to do. And you meet with the same peer consistently, just like you would if you were meeting with anybody, like a clinician, right? And so it's not just, you're just not paired up with a random person or calling some hotline or something. It's really like a professional, ongoing relationship that, like you said, Elizabeth, creates accountability and just helps people to keep moving forward. So
it's amazing. It's amazing. Well, thank you for all you do, Kurt. I'm excited to see where this goes. Congratulations. Happy birthday. Good
thank
luck
you.
with everything. If you guys are out there and you're interested more in what Kurt's doing and the peer network, please go to the description that is in tandem with this podcast, and you will find all the links, and it'll take you directly to where he is.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much, Kurt. Take care. And everybody
All
out there,
right.
thanks so much. Keep getting busy, living sober. I'll see you on Wednesday. Take care. Bye.